Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, in 2015, Harvard and Stanford Business Schools examined job stress and the relationship of mental and physical effects of that stress to mortality. Researchers found that physical issues caused by work-related stress led to more than 120,000 deaths a year. That's more than Alzheimer's, influenza, or diabetes, so it's pretty significant. Dr. Sierra, I'm going to butcher his name because it's really hard to say. Dr. Sierra McCauley joins me around 12:30 for the Stress Solution. Really great book. I've seen a lot of stuff on stress. He has a slightly different take on it, and it's very workable and a great program. And we'll hear from him. He's joining us in the second half of today's show. First, the CDC says that 91% of our population does not eat the daily recommended intake of veggies. And if you've ever tried to force feed a child their fruits and veggies, you know it can be a losing battle. Well, my first guest has a solution that's fun. It's packed full of great information. It's already helped many kids get on the right track, and it's already a multiple award-winning book. My guest is Catherine Kemp-Guillet. She's an MBA, CNC, and a management consultant turned certified nutritional counselor. She's a proud mother of two, and she writes frequently for blogs and publications, including her own Healthy Kids Ideas Exchange. She's the author of Mountain Mantras, Wellness, and Life Lessons from the Slopes, and her new book is called Give It a Go, Eat a Rainbow. Catherine Kemp-Guillet, welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki, for having me on your show.
Very pleased to have you here, and especially on a subject like this, because having, 11 nephews and nieces myself, I know there's maybe two of them that actually enjoy fruits and vegetables, and it's a very big issue for many parents and many schools when they're dealing with kids. But for those who aren't familiar with your work, Catherine, let's just go back a little. Last time you were on, we talked about Mountain Mantras, your book. You talked a lot about how you transitioned from being a management consultant to moving to Sun Valley and changing your whole lifestyle. Having kids was a big, big influence in that change. So for those who aren't familiar, just fill us in a little.
Absolutely. I mean, for many of us, having kids or nieces and nephews, I mean, it can change our lives because we become, we're self-driven, we're independent, and we're thinking about, what we can be doing in the world. And then all of a sudden, we have this responsibility to truly make the world a better place and to pass on these legacies. And you see that every day, when you're with little ones. So when I became a mother, it became very plain to me that I wanted to move beyond the world of corporate America and really move into where I think the future is, and that's with, the younger generations, and in educating kids in schools about how to be healthier and happier. So that's when I moved into nutrition education and founded a nonprofit organization called Nurture. And yes, of course, that involved a lot of change personally in our own lives. I went through my own personal sort of health crises. And I think that actually helps me to help others, is having been through my own dark night of the soul, feeling very, very low energy. I kind of know what works and what doesn't, and getting behind how to motivate people for change.
Yes, and that's a big factor. I know that you've worked with low-income families, and you said that really taught you how to teach this information in a way that is easily digested and affordable.
Absolutely. That has taught me about the importance of overcoming obstacles. And you mentioned that statistic of, 91% of Americans not eating their vegetables. That's almost all of us. So we're talking about an issue that really needs to be addressed. But you're also saying that force feeding the young ones is not the answer. And I wholeheartedly agree. I've worked with so many situations with families, with parents, with groups, where really sometimes it's taking the parent, the teacher out of the equation. I know that sounds like, what is she talking about? But we need to take the tension. We need to take the pressure out. And I found the magic to be in actually having this sort of outside perspective. And in this case, it's a character in the book, Blake, who could be a boy, who could be a girl, who could be any ethnicity. Very, very simple. We found that children really can relate to this character, and the inspiration is coming from that character, which, by the way, was created for my son. So it's also this peer-to-peer messaging, which, again, just takes the pressure off the parents, off the teachers, and lets the kids really perk up their listening.
Right. So this is a very colorful book. I mean, the title, Give It a Go, Eat a Rainbow. Very colorful book. Your son was 12 when he did the illustrations in here. And you also have photography in here, too. And then you did the rhyming content, correct?
You got it. Yeah, and it's interesting because the format's actually called augmented reality, and it's hitting this nerve right now with the Pokemon Go, you know, because that combines the real life with the whimsical illustrations. But it's interesting because it does work with kids because they need to see the photography of the fruits and vegetables, meaning they need to be exposed to the real deal, because it's seeing an illustration of a carrot or of broccoli isn't going to start that process of exposure that kids need mm-hmm. to get them comfortable. So the photography was key. The rhyming is just fun and kids love it. And then the illustrations are simple enough that we just find that the kids can really easily relate.
Yes. I saw a documentary once with Jamie Oliver, the British chef who's been doing a lot of work in schools. And your whole book is about making this fun, and that's where your premise comes from. And I know that's where Jamie comes from, fun and informative. And what struck me, Catherine, and I'm wondering if you find this in your work, was that when the kids were exposed to why vegetables are good for us, why fruit and vegetables are good for us, how they help us, and they knew what they were, because many of the kids in the Oliver film did not even know what a parsnip or a carrot was, they became very receptive to learning, but he had more problem with the adults. I'm wondering if you find that is the common.
Oh, that's so funny. I will tell you, Jamie Oliver is one of my heroes. I am one of his ambassadors, and I urge everyone to go check him out because he's not only adorable, he's just inspirational and wonderful in all that he does. And yes, you know, he has that magic formula of going right to the kids, because kids are like sponges. They're like fresh, open, you know, blank sheets of paper that you can paint on. And if you address them in the right way, not pointing the finger, not judging, not, you know, creating shame, but instead inspiring them, which is what I think Jamie Oliver does very well.
Yes.
And teaching them, kids will respond. And you know what? They will lead their parents, you know, they will take their parents' hands and lead them down the path. So I love the idea of starting with the kids.
Yes. And one of the things I've heard you say is that eating and what they actually swallow, I'm thinking of my brother, because I, for some reason, I loved all fruits and vegetables, always have done. My brother used to hate them. And my mother would say, you can't get up from the table until you've eaten two Brussels sprouts. And he literally would swallow them whole. but now he enjoys them. But as a kid, he did not. And you say that what they actually swallow is one of the few things that kids can actually control. So we don't want to get into this battle. It's a little like potty training, right? In a way.
It is. Yeah. It becomes this power struggle. And we really do want to avoid that. But you talked about, you know, having to taste your vegetables. What I do with kids is I kind of back off. I think it's a very multi-sensory experience. You mentioned the colors in the book. You know, if kids can just look at fruits and vegetables, they love colors. They love the rainbow. They love knowing that each color has some magical benefit to their body. So it starts with the visual. Then what I try to encourage kids to do is to smell their vegetables. Maybe Brussels sprouts isn't, you know, maybe roasted would be good. You know, but even, you know, then actually touching them. I have a game I play with the kids in school where it's, you know, there's a mystery vegetable in the bag, and you know, things like parsnips and carrots, like you mentioned, or jicama that has a interesting texture. Kids get very curious, but what you're doing there is you're not forcing them to do anything they don't want to do. You're engaging their curiosity, and ultimately it will lead to taste. We just need to let the little bit more soft senses lead the way.
Yes, we do. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the resources that you have to support this book, because this is great for parents, for school teachers, for school lunch people. I mean, there's some fantastic resources on your website. So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Catherine Kemp-Guillet, and her new book is called Give It a Go, Eat a Rainbow.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Coming up this month on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. The word abandonment conjures up images of children left at birth, fathers packing up and moving out, sudden betrayal by a lover, or an unexpected death. But abandonment breaks our hearts in subtle ways too. And these heartbreaks can be just as damaging and difficult to heal. Psychotherapist Susan Anderson is the author of the Abandonment Recovery Workbook and the Journey from Abandonment to Healing. Join us for the Abandonment Recovery on Monday, August 22nd at noon Pacific, right here on Alternative Talk 1150. Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Organic, free range, and fresh daily. Alternative Talk 1150.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people passing by. I see friends shaking.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, if you've ever had issues getting a child to eat their veggies, you want to stay with us because my guest, Catherine Kemp-Guillet, has written a fabulous new book called Give It a Go, Eat a Rainbow. It's for kids. It's for parents, teachers, toddler, early childhood educators, kindergarten, and food and health enthusiasts. And of course, it's primarily we want to have this as bedtime reading, right, Catherine?
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Because then in the morning, everyone would wake up and want their vegetables. Everybody tells me that the book makes them hungry.
So tell me, what you go around to schools, I'm assuming, and groups, and you read from the book. How is that being received?
You know, it's interesting. The book was actually created for a specific need because I've been doing these rainbow days in schools for just about 10 years. And so what a rainbow day would involve is it's a special day where the kids get excited about, obviously, the rainbow, the colors. They learn that each color has a benefit to their body, and we try to assign classrooms or grades a particular color so they become sort of the ambassadors of that color, and they learn about all the fruits and vegetables in that color. and it's super cute. They wear that color to school, and so the whole school just becomes this beautiful, you know, visual rainbow on that day. And leading up to Rainbow Day or on Rainbow Day, we have nutrition education lessons for the kids about the importance of eating fruits and vegetables and a balanced diet. And then they have this beautiful rainbow, you know, banquet kind of either at snack time or at lunchtime. And the kids and the parents and the teachers, they all say, oh, my gosh, this is so much fun. The teachers talk about how the kids, their snacks improve, the lunches improve. The parents talk about how their kids, you know, are all of a sudden eating, you know, more vegetables. But what happens with human behavior is things wear off over time if there's no reinforcement. So the teachers and parents said, is there anything you could leave behind that's fun, that reminds the kids of the same messages that you teach on Rainbow Day? And I looked and I looked, and Vicki, we talked about the importance of having real photography.
Right.
So I didn't see books with that. I didn't see books with a storyline with the education in it. So it was one of those things that was like, okay, I can't find it. We're just going to have to create it ourselves. And so, you know, it became this huge team affair, but a labor of love and really created for specific need.
Right. I just want to show this a little to the camera here for people who are watching on video. They probably can't see very well, but this page says, treasures await. See, you'll see what I mean. Your teeth and bones get stronger with green. And then there are a couple of questions down there for the kids to answer. So this is really fully interactive.
Absolutely. And we have heard that that is the most fun for people. If it's not a book that you're just kind of going, da-da-da. And believe me, my kids, when they were little, they had their favorite books they wanted read over and over and over. You want it to be fun and engaging for the parent, too, for the teacher, too. So having something that was kind of a back and forth and not just a monologue was really important to us, and the feedback has been really, really strong on that particular point, that it's almost like a quiz or a game or something along those lines.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit about how the book came together. It came together for a specific reason, as you said. You talked with traditional publishers. They said, kids aren't going to be interested in this. And so you decided to put your own team together. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the traditional publisher said the book was too long and that the kids did not have the attention span for the length and for the material. And believe me, I give kids a whole lot more credit than that. So I went to an art educator that works with K through 8 students all day long, and I said, what's hot right now? And she was the one that pointed me to augmented reality. She said kids are fascinated with it. And this was before Pokemon Go was that. You know, this was more than a year ago.
Yes.
She kind of predicted that trend. She said kids love color, they love the rainbow, and they love a story. And she talked about the multiple layers of stories. So older kids kind of see the reflection to The Wizard of Oz. They see the reflection to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Whereas the very young kids, they might just sit in their car seats and stare at the picture of a beautiful, you know, bunch of carrots, or what are those radishes, or oh my gosh, that purple cabbage is a work of art. So every kid, based on their age, is getting something different out of it. But having that art teacher that works day in, day out, you know, with the kids, knowing what engages them, was really the crucial first step.
Right. And of course, you being a nutritional counselor, expert, author on this, you have put in why kids need to be eating, because I don't think it's enough to say you need to eat them because they're good for you. You go into a little detail about why these foods are good for them.
Absolutely. And to a certain degree, I think being a nutrition educator was a detriment to my ability to write the book, because I wanted to talk about antioxidants and, you know, all the different, you know, vital chemicals. And
right.
That's why it was so great to have the kids involved. We had hundreds of beta reader kids. We had my son, who is the illustrator. We had my daughter who, you know, she helped with the editing. The designer was a very young gal. So having that, you know, perspective on the team was really important. And they said, stop using those words. Just talk about, you know, magic and the heart and the teeth and things, you know, that truly that kids, when we read the book, they'll actually put their hands over their heart when we're talking about red, and they'll point to their teeth when we're talking about green, and they'll rub their tummies when we're talking about white. And it's amazing because, you know, at the end of the book, and believe me, they're completely captivated the whole time, you'll go back and you'll say, what's red good for? And they'll all, just because it's kinetic, they'll all point to their heart. They'll go, oh, it's good for your heart. So it's, you know, again, it's just having that multifaceted team, I think, that really, that was the magic. That was the magic recipe.
Right. And so tell us a little bit about Alexander, your son, because he did a great job. He illustrated this book. As you said, you've got real photography in here, but the story is illustrated all the way through the main character, the character, of course, being Blake. Who came up with that idea?
Alexander is fully 100% responsible for Blake. So Alexander wanted the character to be somebody that you would you guess it's a girl? Would you guess it's a boy? And it's really fun when you're in a group of kids. And do you think Blake's a boy? Do you think Blake's a girl? And everybody has their own opinions, and that's great. The art educator, Kara, said the more simple the drawings, like Charlie Brown, like Flat Stanley, the easier the kids are going to relate. So she was saying you're actually, you know, at a detriment if you have really, 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 really complex illustrations, because it makes it more difficult for the children to put themselves in the shoes of that character and sort of connect. I mean, I grew up with Charlie Brown, and, you know, Snoopy was my dog as far as I was concerned. So he completely took ownership. We picked out the pictures together. He matched it to the background. He worked, you know, side by side with the designer. It was a year of just, I mean, it was incredible that he was doing school at the same time. But he's really talented. He's actually now at the Art Institute of Chicago in a full-time program. He really wants to continue this as something, you know, long-term in his life.
Excellent. And so tell us about the awards. This has not been out that long, and you've already won several awards for it. So tell us about that.
Oh, we are so excited and honored. You know, so we submitted for this. It's so important to get parents and teacher feedback, and obviously we had this beta test, but what was it when we went out to, you know, to people in different countries and people we didn't know? So Parent Tested, Parent Approved is this great organization where they actually send out the book to all these different folks that rate it, they give you comments, and if it meets their criteria, they give you a seal of approval, which is amazing. So we won that award, and we also won the Mom's Choice and the Family's Choice. And, you know, the fact that a book about nutrition got those awards, I mean, we're just astounded. We feel like it's a signal that we're on the right path, hopefully, as a nation.
Right. So let's talk about some of the resources on the website, because we do have a lot of educators and health people really interested in health listening in as our audience. You've got up here several things that would help parents, several things that would help educators, but I'll let you tell us about them.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned the book was written to a need, but, you know, nobody really writes a book to make money. You know, this is a book to help people, to help schools, to help parents, to help organizations. So we wanted to, kind of in the spirit of our nonprofit nurture, to provide a ton of resources that are free. So it's not really about the book. In fact, the book is going to be free on Kindle, I think, on Thursday and Friday of this week. So it's about getting the information out to as many people as possible. So on that Give It A Go, eatarainbow.com site, there are curricula links, there are handouts for parents, but it's in both Spanish and English. We feel that that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
There are videos, there are recipes. I mean, it's almost like this Alice in Wonderland thing where you can just like go from one link to the other and go down the rabbit hole, but in a good way, and just keep finding more and more and more to the point that if you were a teacher and you wanted curricula on eating a rainbow that aligned with the Common Core standards, it's there for you. So it's really a very deep well of resources that we hope will help people.
Yeah, and there's also a downloadable for the kids because they can download their very own Blake, right?
Oh, we're so excited about that because, you know, Flat Stanley was this another character that I loved as a kid, and I had my Flat Stanley, and we mail it to, you know, my grandparents, and that kids are still doing that today. So, again, one of the youngsters on the team said, well, why don't we create a flat Blake so that kids can just download it, color in Blake, cut out Blake, and bring Blake along so that when they're making choices, you know, should I have fries with my meal or should I have fruits and vegetables? Hopefully they choose the fruits and vegetables because they've got Blake along, and then they can even snap a picture with that Blake and put the hashtag Blake Eats a Rainbow, and they instantly become part of our tag board, which is on that website. And it's about building a community where it's becoming cool for kids to choose fruits and vegetables.
Well, Catherine Cangallet, what a great book you've put. Again, another great book from you. And I really appreciate you talking with us about this today and all the resources that are available and the free Kindle download that's available. You said Thursday and Friday, I think. But final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
Well, I just want to express my appreciation for being able to come on your show. And again, it's about creating a movement. So let's continue this momentum around healthy eating, because it's all about having energy to be healthier and happier.
And the book is Give It a Go, Eat a Rainbow. And that's also the website too, right? It will take them to makewellnessfun.com.
That is right. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine. Appreciate it. And again, the website, giveitago, eatarainbow.com. And please stay tuned. We'll be right back. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Coming up this month on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, the word abandonment conjures up images of children left at birth, fathers packing up and moving out, sudden betrayal by a lover, or an unexpected death. But abandonment breaks our hearts in subtle ways too, and these heartbreaks can be just as damaging and difficult to heal. Psychotherapist Susan Anderson is the author of the Abandonment Recovery Workbook and the Journey from Abandonment to Healing. Join us for the Abandonment Recovery on Monday, August 22nd at noon Pacific, right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes I do the same things over and over, until one day I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
On the path to good health and well-being? Alternative Talk 1150 is the station for you.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, I said at the top of the hour, I shed some numbers on the physical stresses and mental stresses that add to work-related stress and health problems. And it was quite staggering. And so we have an expert here on the subject. This is a different book, as I've said at the top of the hour, too. It's got information in here that I haven't seen in other places, and that's what we're always looking for. Let me introduce my guest. He's Dr. Arthur Sierra McCauley. He's a licensed clinical psychologist and has been treating clients for more than 30 years. He's a member of the American Psychological Association and the Massachusetts Psychological Association. He's currently in private practice and has been on the faculty of Harvard Medical School for several years. And he's written this new book, as I said, called The Stress Solution, Using Empathy and Cognitive Behavioral Therapy to Reduce Anxiety and Develop Resilience. Dr. Arthur Sierra McCauley, welcome.
Thank you very much, Vicki. I appreciate being on your show. And the fact that you pronounced my name correctly is very, very rare.
I don't think I did it at the top of the hour, but we'll forget that bit. So I liked this book because it takes a slightly different approach. One of the things you talk about in the introduction of the book is that there are many, many, many stress solutions out there. Some of them take many years to accomplish. Some of them are almost instant fixes, but they don't have lasting effects.
Yeah.
This method that you use, combining empathy and cognitive behavioral therapy, provide a fairly quick solution, but also a lasting solution. What's the difference?
Well, I emphasize in the book, Vicki, that stress is produced by perception for the most part. And people who are stressed on a daily basis are perceiving inaccurately most of the time. And, you know, being able to perceive accurately is crucial to reducing stress, and old biased thinking based on early conditioning distorts reality and it creates unnecessary tension, meaning that we all grow up with biases. We grow up with biases about ourselves and about other people. And those biases interfere with how we perceive. And if we're perceiving inaccurately, we're causing stress. If we cause stress by perceiving inaccurately, we produce the stress hormone cortisol, which can be very dangerous. You know, cortisol causes anxiety. It causes negative thinking. It causes weight gain, inflammation, hair loss, breaks down muscle tissue, causes flabbiness, depression, and it kills neurons in the memory center of the brain. And recently, we've discovered that it throws off blood sugar levels, which means cortisol, when it's in our system, the stress hormone, too often, it throws off blood sugar levels, which creates a craving for sugary substances and increases fat cells. So this stress hormone, when we perceive inaccurately and produce it, can be dangerous to our health in many ways.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I read in your book that 66% of visits to primary care doctors are stress-related.
Yeah.
And about
yeah.
50% of American workers say they stay awake at night troubled. Now, have you seen that go up lately?
It is rising. I mean, and I think one of the difficulties is that many people are concerned also about our political climate, you know, with presidential candidates' emphasis on aggression, insults, lying, and lack of integrity. It's kind of symbolic of the de-emphasis on the importance of character and empathy currently dominating our elected officials and the society as a whole. You know, we have fewer people feeling empathic toward each other. Our prejudice rates have raised. And as you know, in the book, I wrote a chapter on prejudice and how misperceiving can lead to prejudice. And when we misperceive, we reproduce that stress hormone cortisol again, and it also reduces empathy. So when we're tense with other people because they're not familiar to us, it produces cortisol, and it also reduces our ability to see them clearly. So the society as a whole, we're suffering from, a drought of character and integrity, and instead we put much emphasis on material possessions and appearance. You know, we're very appearance-driven, and we're very influenced by status and achievement to the neglect of character and the importance of relationships.
Yes. Absolutely. I want to just, let's define the difference between sympathy and empathy, because a lot of people, I'm a writer, I know a lot of people do confuse those two.
Mm-hmm. Well, empathy is the capacity to understand and respond to the unique experience of another. It's essentially everyday mind reading. It's part of our genetic endowment. You know, it's not an emotion or a feeling, but it's a capacity that's innately present. The problem is if we don't use it, in a disciplined and use it, it can atrophy like an unused muscle. So empathy really seeks to understand where sympathy seeks to console. Sympathy rushes in quickly. Empathy is very fact-oriented. If I could give you an example, I have a client who, she moved to a neighborhood in the Boston area, and her dad had passed away a year ago. She came from California, and she was very devastated by the loss of her father because she was very close to him. Well, she heard in the neighborhood that one of her neighbor's dad had passed away in the last few days. So she felt so connected to this woman because of, you know, having a similar loss that she put together a bouquet of flowers and a basket of food, and she went over and brought it to her neighbor. She rang the doorbell, and the neighbor answered the doorbell, and she said, "Oh, my God, I know how devastated you must be. I lost my father a year ago. It's so terrible. I haven't been able to sleep at night." And the neighbor looked at her, and she said, "You know, I appreciate your generosity, but my father left our family when I was 2 years old. I never met my father. I wouldn't know my father if he was walking down the street. So I appreciate your kindness, but I'm not devastated at all."
Right. Totally different experience.
Sympathy rushed in, assuming, based on our identification with someone else, that the experience is the same. Where empathy slows it all down and would have really sought to understand, what was this woman's relationship to her father? Could it be very different than mine? Of course it could be.
Yes, yes, very different experiences. I want to talk a little about cell, and I'm probably going to say these wrong, but microglia cells, could you talk to us a little about those? Because there's been new findings around that.
Well, these are cells in the brain that relate to inflammation, and we didn't think that stress and the stress hormone cortisol influenced them, but we know that the hormone cortisol does influence them. It also deteriorates their functioning. So that's an important other factor in terms of what cortisol can do, because not only does it break down muscle tissue and do those other things and cause inflammation, but it also has negative functions in the brain. So we don't realize what cortisol does in its many negative effects over time, because we don't always feel it. You know, it's sort of like people who live with a low-level temperature. You don't realize you have a normal temperature until the low-level temperature dissipates. So there's effects in the brain. There's effects in all of our organs. And, again, we literally can lose cells in the memory center of the brain due to cortisol. And so many Americans are stressed on a daily level. I mean, part of the reason I wrote this book is because people use the word so often. And, you know, 85% of my practice now, Vicki, is not people who are mentally ill. They're people who are just stressed. And
right.
As I wrote in the book, they work too hard, sleep too little, love with half a heart, and then they wonder why they're just not at ease and not happy with their lives.
Yeah, I remember my mother saying, "Why is everybody so stressed these days? That's all I ever hear. Everybody's stressed, stressed, stressed." But we also don't have the physical outlet that we used to. You know, I don't think going to the gym for an hour is the same as, you know, laboring in the fields or whatever we used to do, you know, way back when.
Yes. People were physically active in those days. And we know that, you know, in some areas of China, for instance, where peasants live, where they have little access to medical care, they're the healthiest people because they're active every day. And, of course, their diet is very good as well. I wrote a chapter in the book, as you know, on self-care, diet.
Yes.
And exercise, but also the resistance to doing it. Because, again, when we're perceiving inaccurately, when we think we're not liked, or we think we're not attractive enough, or we're not intelligent enough, or athletic enough, we produce these hormones that lower our mood. And we live our lives according to our mood. So if you're walking around all day thinking people don't like you, or you're misperceiving and thinking they don't like you, and then you start becoming critical of yourself, your mood goes down.
Right.
And when our mood is down, we don't feel like exercising. We don't feel like eating well. And again, cortisol throws off that blood sugar level, and it makes us crave sugary foods. So when we're stressed, we stop exercising, we stop contacting friends, we tend to withdraw, and then we tend to eat poorly. And it's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah, that horrible negative loop that is easy to get stuck in. So the whole book really is based on empathic cognitive behavioral therapy. You say it's, in essence, the best of both worlds. It doesn't belabor the past, as in psychoanalysis, but it does acknowledge the effects of that past. Talk to us a little bit about why this is the best approach.
Well, cognitive behavioral therapy can be very effective because it focuses on misperception. You know, the traditional ways that we may misperceive, like generalizing or black and white thinking or catastrophizing or mind reading or magnifying, all these ways that we can misperceive. And I have a whole list of them in the beginning of the book and throughout the book, because it's more of a workbook, Vicki, where I ask people to sort of identify with the stories I tell and which one of these cognitive distortions do you use, and try to and I give helpful hints about how to rearrange that. But one of the things that happens is if you don't include the past, which cognitive behavioral therapy doesn't do, you need to understand the past in order to unravel it and clarify it. So empathy allows us to understand how we learn to misperceive, because when we slow down and we give and receive empathy, we produce the hormone oxytocin, which was been called the magical neurotransmitter. It slows us down and it reduces anxiety and cortisol levels. It helps us live longer. It aids in recovery from illness. It promotes a sense of calm and well-being, and it increases generosity and empathy, and it protects against heart disease. And one of the important things it does is it reduces craving for addictive substances, and it creates a bond and trust in each other so that we can slow down and really open up to each other. And when we do that, when we are in those empathic interchanges, we learn more about where our biases are because we're open to the other person.
Mm.
It's just like, you know, somebody thinking because somebody walks by you and they're frowning and you automatically think they're angry because you had an angry parent.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tell you the next day they had a migraine and that's why they were frowning.
Right, right.
So the approach kind of teaches you to slow down and learn where your biases are from the past. I'm not in favor of overdoing the past like an analysis and some of these longer therapies, but I am in favor of understanding it if it interferes with the present.
Yeah.
That's what empathy helps us do.
That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. Well, the book is called The Stress Solution, Using Empathy and Cognitive Behavioral Therapy to Reduce Anxiety and Develop Resilience. When we come back, I want to talk about second-hand stress and sadness versus depression. My guest is Dr. Arthur Sierra Macaulay. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we'll be right back.
Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk, every Sunday morning beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Anti-Icky Poo, the product that gets the stink out, we cover the world of animals. This week, August 21st, it's Harmonic Energy Shifting Sunday with Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon. They'll be in the studio with their Accutonic Forks, Tibetan Bowls and Bells, Pua, Didge and Rattles, ready to do remote sessions for you, your animal friends, your home or business. Open phone lines throughout the show, so call in early. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Bringing good vibes to the Puget Sound and the world. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Well, if you're listening to this and you get the stress solution written by Dr. Arthur Sierra McCauley, you won't be stressed out anymore. I don't know where you find this music, Eric, but thanks for that. It was cool. All right. So I wanted to talk in this segment about a little bit, go into the book a little bit more. And as we mentioned earlier, I think Dr. Sierra McCauley mentioned, at the end of each chapter, he gives exercises that progress and on top of each other. And there are also some quizzes at the back you should take to get some baseline and evaluate your progress and success. But it's very simple to do. And I've actually gone through and done many of them myself, which I found quite helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I wanted to talk in this, I wanted to kick this segment off with secondhand stress, because it's not really something I thought about too much until I recently ran into somebody who is living in utter chaos, living a delusional life, quite frankly, on many levels. And I started to feel irritated every time I was around this person.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realized it's this chaos. It's the lies and the fantasy. And so I had to stop that where it was. But I also was talking with a friend who's got multiple sclerosis. And as you can imagine, when you're in that condition, you want to live as stress-free as possible. And she just had to let go of a very long-term friendship because of the same kind of situation. Every time he was around, she just felt stressed. So talk to us a little bit about this secondhand stress, as you call it.
Well you described it perfectly, Vicky, because when we're with people who are stressed, or and particularly people who are stressed chronically, our nervous systems talk to each other. So if you're very stressed, you're going to influence my nervous system somewhat, unless I learn how to deal with it more effectively, and that's where empathy comes in. Because you can't just like passively listen to people when they're stressed, and a lot of people do that because they're trying to be pleasing. But it's too stressful, and that's why you don't want to call that person back or go out to lunch with them again. Because if they're just venting, or they tend to be highly stressed people in general, again, we have a remote control in our hands, and we can trigger the other person's stress response. So what do we need to do to combat that? We need to have empathy so that we understand what is this person looking for, and being able to talk, not just to be a passive listener. For instance, saying to someone, you know, you've been complaining about your boss pretty much the last three or four times we met, or you've been complaining about your husband or wife the last three or four times we met. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
What is your plan to conquer this difficulty? Because I believe that change is an active process, and that's why I ask at the end of every chapter for people to take an action with someone else that they're close to. Because we need to be able to speak, to ask open-ended questions, and that's really what empathy is. It doesn't conclude it and say we know what you should do, but we're trying to ask and help you honestly instead of just venting, because venting raises your blood pressure and then it raises mine too. What do you want to do? What's the plan?
Right.
And a lot of people just want to talk about their stress. They don't want to do anything with it, which is incredibly stressful. And I think at some point we need to be able, through our empathy, to set a limit and say, you know, I want to understand you. I want to help you. I really care about you. But we're going over the same thing over and over again, and I don't see you taking any alternative action.
Yes.
What's the action you want to take to make this better?
Yes, and it's very frustrating when you're listening to that. And, you know, I wonder if you can have too much empathy, because I think I found myself in situations where I've become utterly depleted before I've said, okay, enough is enough.
Yes. You know, people have said that to me often. They have too much empathy. And what I say, if you're really using empathy, Empathy teaches us who to get close to and who to remain distant from, because it allows us to see beyond the surface, beyond the cover of the book, into the soul and the heart of another person to know who they are. It allows us to see what their character is about. And some people, it's important to remain more distant from. Some people, it's important to set limits with. And that's what empathy is. We don't get in too far where we get worn out and depleted. You know, that's why people ask me, how can you listen to people all day and not get depleted? Well, I don't get depleted because it's an interaction. I don't just passively listen.
Mm-hmm.
If I thought you were doing something in your life that was destructive, I'd say, Vicky, you know, you're obviously drinking too much. What's the plan? What are we going to do about this?
Right.
And then
if they don't take action, really, what do you do?
Then I think you have to be honest with them and say, you know, I care about you. Maybe I love you, but you're not willing to do something for yourself, and I can't do that for you.
Right.
I can give you what I can. I can listen. I can help you make a plan.